Hi, this is Paul Siegel. You're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and youtube.com/wanderingdms/live. And now, on with the show. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan. Today on Wandering DMs, we're going to be talking about mysteries. Maybe you want to run a murder investigation or solve an ancient riddle or dive into a missing persons case. You know, it's been a long-standing puzzle whether you can do that in D&D or not, and we're going to untangle that on this episode. All that and more today on Wandering DMs.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back. Before we get into the discussion today, I will remind everyone, as always, that at the end of the show will be our after-party chat. That is a private video chat that we host with our patrons, and you can join in by becoming a patron. Just visit patreon.com/wanderingdms, join at any tier, and as part of that, you will get an invite to our Discord server. Get that all set up during the show, because at about 10 minutes after the hour, about 2:10-ish Eastern time, we will be on there hosting our after-party chat to dig more into the topic of mysteries.
We love that every week, and if you haven't joined us before, please become a patron, maybe at the $1 level, and we would love to have new people join us every week. Have a great time in the following hour.
Yeah, so absolutely. William, thank you so much. Vaquias, thank you so much for posting our season one discussion of puzzles and riddles. You know, the funny thing is, I was just telling Dan that now that we are in season seven, my first problem of picking new topics is always to go, I got to search. I guess, did we already talk about this? I can't remember.
It's a big mystery.
Yeah. It's a big mystery. So, and in fact, I want to add that today's very topic is inspired by our Discord chat. There was some discussion about whether Bakuyas truly did or did not have a secret method for what was it? What was last week's topic, Dan?
Now you throw me critical failures. Critical failures, Paul.
Critical failures. Yeah. So there's a big mystery being unraveled in the Discord server about whether or not Bakuyas has a secret method for handling critical failures. And I will not spoil that.
Okay. Amazing.
So, okay.
Yeah.
Mysteries. What are your thoughts, Dan? Yeah, in D&D.
Right, well, I'm glad you brought this up,
Paul. It's a classic thing, right? Yeah, go for it.
Yeah. I will say, so last week we had one of those episodes, I mean, speaking of the critical failures, where I kind of want to see, unpredictability and occasionally surprising things happen and broken swords and dropped weapons and tripping and stuff like that. And you just came out and said, don't do it. Don't want to see any of that.
Just don't.
I'm actually pretty skeptical, particularly in the D&D system, whether mysteries are actually feasible or not. To be totally honest, specifically in D&D, if we're talking like Columbo style investigation, interrogations of people, I tend to avoid that in my D&D games. I do.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is it's a format of adventure that I think that we see time and time again. There are lots of published adventures that try to accomplish this to varying levels of success. And I agree that system is a big part of it, right? And that maybe D&D isn't quite the right setting for that kind of adventure. It is sort of the thing I think that tends to come from campaign play organically, right? Like most D&D adventures, if you're starting a brand new D&D campaign, I feel like usually maybe I'm being way too maybe making assumptions about how you want to organize your D&D campaign. But for me, I like to start with like a real sandbox kind of setting of like, here's the world and here's the locations and here's the hidden treasures and the monsters and the political factions maybe that are present. And then I just kind of let my players run loose in that space. Right. And that's kind of like how I like to set up a campaign. And certainly if you've got enough detail and you're playing for a while and you like NPC interactions and that kind of thing, this may just come up organically, right? It may come up that like there is some puzzling thing that the players feel like they need to solve by the standard methods of your kind of murder mystery setup, right? There's a bunch of NPCs involved. We don't know their motivations. We're going to have to like search for clues. We're going to have to interrogate NPCs, et cetera, et cetera.
I will say that, you know, so there's different opinions about this. So just as we get started, some of the comments in our chat have gone in directly the opposite direction of what I said. So, for example, our friend Joshua, right off the bat said, original D&D is a perfect fit for it because it doesn't pretend to offer mechanics to present mysteries. Mm-hmm. And then we already have some chat anticipating some of the problems that would happen in D&D, frankly. So let me, you know, okay, let me just dig into that.
My one observation I want to make, which is I don't think it's totally at odds with old school D&D themes, right? I've argued this many times that I think old school D&D is not about, you know, action, right? We're not making an action movie. We're not, you know, it's not all about just kill the monsters and take their stuff. Although certainly people run it that way. But that it's about, for me, it's about exploration, right? And that's why I like to start with the sandbox space, right? There's a lot of stuff. Yeah. There's a lot of things, a lot of stuff in the world that's going on. And different groups, you know, I play it different. Even you just look at back at the old birthday game, right? Where I read Dyson's Delve, which is just a pretty straightforward mega dungeon. But the first thing I felt like I needed to do with that was plot out the factions so I understood the motivations of the different monster groups.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think the main action of old school games is exploring a space and trying to connect the dots about what the heck is going on here, which is kind of murder mystery-ish, right? Maybe?
I mean, okay, so now we're going to wind up coming together in the middle again. So briefly, I've tried murder mysteries in D&D in the distant past, and it wasn't satisfying, and it felt weirdly paced and like weird attention issues. So I got away, and I don't do murder mysteries in D&D. Now, I feel like part of what you said that I'm going to agree very strongly with is that D&D is about exploring spaces. And I guess thinking about it, I might draw a distinction between the standard play of D&D of exploring a space versus interrogating people. And I feel that the promise of D&D is let's imagine a space that you're moving through that's a little bit fantastical, a little bit dangerous, is a lot more visceral than just talking to people. And I feel that, you know, the promise of D&D is not that latter thing. So exploring spaces, yes, interrogating people, not so much. Is kind of my distinction I'm going to draw today.
Okay.
Law and Order is more about talking to people than exploring spaces, which is kind of what you normally expect in D&D.
Let's put a pin in that. And I want to go over some of the attempts, right? Let's talk about some of the historical attempts at doing this, because as I mentioned, there's a lot of there's been a lot of ink spilled on trying to create these. And I almost feel like what I was describing before, when they organically appear in your campaign, I almost think those could tend to go over better than pre-written modules where they're trying to set up from whole cloth. Hey, there's this murder mystery for you to go.
Yeah, I like this.
And then specifically, I think the one that you and I both really want to talk about, and I think that's already shown up in the chat, is The Assassin's Knot, right? L2. Got my copy right here. Great. What
now, Paul, I know that you love module L1, right? Also by Len Lakofka, very closely connected to this module. And I know that you've started a lot of campaigns with your rather beloved Secret of Bone Hill L1, and this is the follow-up to it.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is, one of the things I love about L1 is I think it is the best kind of prepackaged, pre-written sandbox, which is exactly what it is, right? Here's this area around Restenford. There's no adventure in L1, really, right? There's some locations. Here's some caves. Here's some. Here's this castle, whatnot. There's characters. Here's these NPCs who are doing these things. And it's good luck with that, I guess, right?
There's no mission, right? There's nobody coming in and give in L1. There's no one coming in and giving you a mission. Go get X and bring it back. That doesn't exist. There's a bunch of interesting stuff for you to decide what you want to do with.
Yep. So L2 is like a record scratch for me, right? Like for some reason, and you and I were discussing, like, should there be an expectation in these old TSR modules just because they have the same letter code that they are, you know, continuations of each other or not? And in some cases, I would say not, right? You look at like the B series or the X series, they're just collections of adventures that kind of fit that, whatever constraint they're trying to set up, a level range, a specific edition of the game, etc. But L1 and L2 are clearly tightly coupled, right? They're written by the same person. They involve the same NPCs, right? That like L2 starts off talking about like, you know, okay, so you've finished L1 and your characters are in this space, right? Yeah. It uses, you know, a lot of that stuff. And then I'll even read like in the very introduction, the very first line of this is, this module is different from most other modules. It is a murder mystery, all caps mystery. First, we'll have to assemble the clues you give to discover the murderer and prevent him from carrying out his plans. Radically different from L1. Radically different.
Yeah. As expected, right? It's a murder mystery. So the baron that you were interacting with maybe before has been murdered in a sealed room that nobody could get into. And has a couple of clues in his hands or something like that that you're going to follow up on. So just standard Agatha Christie murder mystery right out of the box is what we're playing.
Yep. I mean, now the interesting thing is this comes from a time period when these modules had a certain, shall we say, method of or format that was very common of them, right? You expect in the inside of one of these modules to open up and see a bunch of blue maps, which you do.
Yep.
And you expect to see a bunch of key locations, which it has.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which is weird when the thrust of your adventure is a murder mystery. It's a little odd.
It's a little awkward.
And then I would say it also falls into a classic problem with a lot of these modules, which is the tendency to railroad, right? One of the things about murder mysteries or any mystery, really, like if the whole thrust of the module is this weird thing has happened, you got to go investigate and figure it out, is that that means that there is a bunch of premeditated content that is withheld from the players that the DM is supposed to make available to them, let's say, right? Which is, you know, it's funny, as I try to describe this broadly, it sounds an awful lot like dungeon crawling. Yep, there's a bunch of bunch of hidden content that the DM has to describe to the players as they explore it. Okay, kind of similar. But like one of the tells here for me in the introduction is the players will have to assemble the clues you give to discover the murderer and prevent him from carrying out his plans. There is an expectation here that the players are going to do X, Y, Z. And if they don't, where does that leave you?
Right. And I'll also draw a distinction between, I think in that same introduction you're reading from a couple lines later, it says also in all caps, so it must be very important. It says, remember, every action will cause a reaction. So I think that kind of underscores that, you know, the classic, you know, D&D dungeon structure has a lot of constraints that make it easier for the DM to handle. You either take the left passage or the right passage, and the DM can kind of pre-plan, like, okay, I can handle the left or the right, and then I'll move on from there. But I think the promise, you know, these murder mysteries tend to be in cities or towns, and there tends to be a lot more freedom of movement. And I think that line seems to say that the DM needs to manage all the NPCs in the entire book at all times, and kind of think about how they're going to learn and find out and respond and interact to try to foil the players in different ways. And that's certainly a lot more complicated to have all the running pieces moving all the time, as opposed to just like a couple of rooms that you're exploring from moment to moment.
I love that you're bringing this up, because this kind of bleeds into the other module I really want to talk about, which is not a D&D module, it's a Warhammer Fantasy RPG module. So please forgive me, but it is Power Behind the Throne. So this is the third book in the Enemy Within series. I ran it as part of 10 Dead Rats. And when I read it, it was the one that I was most skeptical of. I was like, this is not, don't see if this is really going to be fun. This is going to be very difficult for me to run. I don't know if they're going to enjoy it at all. It's very different from everything else in the game. So broad strokes, the Power Behind the Throne is the players, for whatever reason, decide to travel to Middenheim. And there's this crazy thing going on where there's this big power struggle. I think the noble who's in charge is, I can't remember, dying or preparing to, pass on his power to someone else. And there's about, I think, 16 NPCs all jockeying for that, for some outcome. And then specifically also, it even narrows down further. The strangest thing is when the players enter Middenheim, there's a big festival going on. So there's lots of people arriving in town at that time period. And they're all encountering this problem of there are these weird new taxes, right? So the main thrust of the adventure here is, what's up with those taxes? Right? It's really that, right? That is the main plot of the Power Behind the Throne. What's up with those taxes? Yeah. So this kind of stuff, right? Like there's a wizard tax, there's a scroll tax which directly impacts wizards, right? There's a scroll tax, there's a dwarf tax, and so probably there's one or two party members who are kind of upset about this as they're being asked for lots of money as they walk in the door.
That's funny.
Like, what the hell? That's discriminatory and terrible, and I hate it, right? Right. So the assumption in here is that the players are going to dig into this, that they're going to go around and start talking to people and be like, what's up with those taxes, right? And they're going to uncover all these people of power, and they're going to, and there's a more nefarious plot going on, of course, right? Of course. The taxes are just one detail of a much bigger mystery for the players to unravel, right? And it goes through and it exactly says, so one of the difficulties of this, and unfortunately my copy, they've already been torn out, but like one of the things it came with was 16 individual cards of all of the NPCs involved, what their motivations are, what their schedule was for the entire festival, right? And so you had these cards you could quickly shuffle through and be like, which one are the players talking to, and it's a lot to juggle. My players loved it. They called it out in our retrospective as their favorite part of the campaign.
Okay.
Which I was not expecting at all. Not expecting at all. So I think, for me, like, I will only talk about, and the Power Behind the Throne is not perfect. I will say it's not perfect. It falls into some traps. There's specifically one of the problems is, so I'm getting ahead of myself. Let me talk about what I like about it, and then I'll tell you about the problems. One of the things I like about it is that the mystery is inconsequential to the larger scale thing of what the players are doing.
Okay, yes,
it adds flavor, it adds texture, maybe sets up some, and some of the major enemies in the larger campaign are involved. But like, the players could just sit back and watch the whole thing unfold and go, huh, that was weird, and leave. And that's fine. It doesn't break anything.
Okay. Wow.
Right. And I think that's way better than than say the Assassin's Knot, which basically lays out, well, the players better stop the bad guys or nothing. Right. It gives no alternative. Just says they had better stop him before he gets through with his evil plan.
Yeah.
Whereas Power Behind Throne is actually pretty good at laying out, like, here's what's going to happen if the players just do nothing. And there's a whole section, honestly, in the back, which I love, which is just like, okay, well, here's the bad guy's plan, and day to day, here's what he's going to do. And if the players don't stop, don't adjust that in any way, that's what's going to happen. And I think that's great. Like, I think you need that for these kind of mystery.
Yeah, I see that. I see that.
Right. Yeah. So I like that a lot. You know, I like that. You know, I like the you know, there's still some, a couple areas. There's still some stuff to explore in here. There's still, you know, a few maps. These guys are doing this terrible thing and you can go invade their hideout maybe if you want, but there's no requirement to do any of it. You know, and you know, there is one. Okay. So the knock I'll give it is that at the end, it seems like the major reason for this existing in the larger scale of the greater campaign is it introduces this one villain, and it says at the end he must escape, right? This is a linchpin villain. It says, well, if the players do this, he escapes in this way, and if the players do that, he escapes in that way, and it's like
not the best.
Come on.
Right. And that's the kind of thing that you tend to wind up happening when you're really trying to drive these mysteries, depending on the game system. And that always kind of irks me a little bit. It sounds like there's not too much of it in that adventure.
Yeah. No, I mean, they try their best to not paint themselves into that corner. Right. But I can't say, I mean, generally all the Warhammer Enemy Within stuff falls into that trap. At one point or another, most of it falls into that. Like, well, you know, these things could happen, but like, we generally assume that the players are going to be successful and get involved, frankly, and get involved. Mm-hmm. And that was one of my biggest fears when this is that I thought the players are going to walk into Midnheim and go, ah, taxes, that sucks. Yeah, let's go to the festival. Like, all right. Well, I was totally prepared for that too. I'm like, they might just skip all this content. They might just be like, screw it. Right. And that's a lot of prep work. You know, I got to study these 16 different NPCs and know all their ins and outs. I do all this prep for the players to just nope out of it.
You know, okay. I respect this. And I want, and I respect this a lot, Paul. And I feel like when, people criticize like a critical secret door in a dungeon, I'm okay with it on the same. If you're willing to accept, they just might not find that content and it's okay.
Yeah.
I'm perfectly willing to accept that. And one of the classic adventures that's kind of mystery-ish for me is the Gary Gygax's Lost Temple, Forgotten Temple of Thrizden. And I've never run it, frankly, but it really sticks in my imagination because there is a major part of that complex behind a particular couple of secret doors with basically no signal to it. And I personally can't imagine that anyone's ever going to find it, but it's okay. Players can explore the place. They can fight monsters. They can get treasures and they might not ever find the big mystery. And I kind of feel that that's kind of a ballsy design move to accept that. And again, you know, I think that also maybe comes out of Gygax's campaign, as we talked about, with an enormous number of players, like going through Castle Greyhawk. And if the first 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 parties don't find something, that's okay. It's super special for number 9 or 10 or 11, whoever finally finds it. But I actually really respect the design point of like, there's some content that maybe nobody ever finds, and that's all right.
I mean, you're you know, the way you set that up, it reminds me a lot of Rappanathic, right? Where like the entrance to the entire dungeon is super hidden and your players are very unlikely to find it. And then let us toss in this whole thing of like, well, there's this well that probably leads into the dungeon and you should definitely don't go in it. Right. There's just like red, giant red text everywhere. Don't go in the well. It's constantly broadcast to the players. And the funny thing is, I think did we talk to Matt Finch or Bill Webb or somebody about that? And I just assumed that like, oh, well, you're just goading them into going in there, right? Like that's the point of saying you must absolutely not do this is just playing the reverse psychology card to force your players to go do that thing. And I feel like the response we got was like, no, that's not what we were intending when we wrote it that way. Like, no, it's really super dangerous.
This This is this weird. This is such a weird thing, Paul, because our experience with that friggin' well has zigzagged back and forth. Because I was certain. I mean, you just, the things are too horrible, frankly, at the bottom of the well. They are, in fact, too horrible for low level characters. And then our characters do it. And then when we played with Bill Webb, he totally said, the well says not to do this, but you do it anyway. That was those seven words were the introduction to the adventure. And then we talked to Finch, and he says, no, people shouldn't go down the well. So it's like, it's the weirdest, it's the weirdest hazy thing. Now I don't even know anymore.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah. Anyway, I bring up Rappanathic just because, like, that remind, like, that it's very possible for the players to miss all of Rappanathic, right? You just miss the whole thing, the entire fuck, just because, like, I don't know how to get into this thing. It's locked, I guess. There's no key. It's there's no nothing. Campaign. There's no door.
Yeah. You can pull that off in a big campaign. Let me talk. I want to briefly talk about a couple other classic D&D adventures. So we mentioned L2, which is such a radical thematic change from L1. It's really jarring that it goes from this sandbox thing to this interrogation thing. Now, the other things that popped into my mind is that's pretty well known back in the day is came out a year before L2, actually, is Module U1, the start of the U series. The Sinister Secret of Salt Marsh. So this came out in 83, I believe, and Assassin's Knot came out in 84. So briefly, right, it's a Scooby-Doo haunted house. There's reputedly a haunted house on the coast, and ghostly things are happening, and the players go to investigate, and it turns out there aren't any ghosts. So as one of our audience said at the start, jinkies, yeah, it's absolutely the Scooby-Dooest Scooby-Doo adventure ever. And some people some people love it, right? Yeah. I will point out that it's an adventure for character levels 1 to 3 is kind of part of the thing that I'm looking at here. You've got Assassin's Knot by Len Lakofa, which is for PC levels 2 to 5 is what that one says at the on the cover. And then it also occurs to me that there's Module B6 that came out in 84. I guess, okay, so U1 came out in 81. L2 came out in 83. This did come out in 84. This is for the basic D&D game by Dave Cook, who wrote the book. He wrote the expert rules. He wrote the second edition rules. He's kind of the man. And again, murder mystery in a city, in the main city of the D&D basic known world. And there's three competing family factions. Who did it? Who did it? I don't know. And you have to figure out who the murderer is, among other things. And once again, it's for basic levels, which is to say levels 1 to 3. So all of these examples of solve the murder mystery, I'll point out, are all very low level in D&D. And I don't think that's an accident. I think it certainly, this kind of thing certainly works, and I have a larger story about this, but I think it certainly is easier to work at a very low introductory level, and as soon as you get to maybe even mid-levels, you start to have problems with the amount of magic resources that characters have that are going to break the standard murder mystery thing. But they try it a couple times. Now, I will say there's another one. There's a D&D module, I guess it's CM5, out a year after that one, called Mystery of the Snow Pearls, that actually is for a max level elf in the D&D basic game. So a 10th level, it's a solo game, it's a hidden viewer game, so you run it with no DM, and that one does have a 10th level elven fighter wizard, and I haven't run it, so unfortunately I can't say anything about it. I should probably just play it myself to find out what it's like. Yeah. Most of these things in D&D are low level.
Interesting. Now, I personally, some people
adore these things, and I don't like any of those adventures. I have refrained from running all those because the Scooby-Doo element to U1, I don't I mean, if you're playing D&D and you're throwing out like ghosts and undead, I expect to see ghosts and undead. I don't, it's weird. Like, why do you have to trick me? Why do you have to trick me with like fake ghosts? There are actual ghosts in D&D. You don't need to do that. Right?
That is hilarious. I feel like I've probably read B6 and what's the U1? U1. U1. That's yeah. I think I've read them. I've never run either of them. Generally, I will agree that I find the writing of most published murder mystery, or just mystery in general, I'm going to broaden this, mystery themed modules, I find generally are lacking what I want. Now, the one thing I want to compare this all to, you know, because there is plenty of written content that has mysteries in it that I love, and that's mostly in the realm of horror. And it's interesting to me that, you know, most of the horror games that I've written and most of the horror scenarios that I've run that have been written by other folks, they usually start out in the realm of mystery, right? There's these weird things. These weird events have gone on. You are investigators. Please go figure out the weird things, right? And then there's just usually in horror, there's, especially cosmic horror, which is mostly what I run, there's this switcheroo moment of like, haha, you thought it was going to be, your characters were in a space where they believed it was going to be a fairly normal explanation, maybe bad, but a normal. And then, nope, there's this crazy supernatural thing that is just way beyond anything you expected. And now good luck surviving that. And the funny thing is, as I compare like the D&D mystery novel or adventures to, you know, Cthulhu or other horror scenarios, I feel like the difference here is very subtle, right? In both cases, like some weird things have happened, some things have already happened that the players have to go investigate and figure out what and why those things happened, and maybe deal with the fallout of them happening. And the major difference, I think, in horror is that it's too late. The bad things have happened to a degree that it is already too late for you to deal with it. And in D&D, those mysteries are usually like, it's not too late. You can stop them.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And I almost feel like that's what makes it worse, right? It makes it worse in D&D because now it's not too late. You could stop them, but you must stop them, right? And in fact, I expect you to stop them. And if you don't stop them, we are at an impasse with this module, which I think is really terrible. I feel like that's a major component. Like if you're going to write a mystery or run a mystery scenario in D&D, I think it is very important that it actually doesn't matter if the players successfully solve it or not, because you don't know, right? Very likely that they will just get totally stymied, as likely they will figure it out on in the first moment and run through it. So I have written, I have actually on my Watch Factory Games site, I have a D&D scenario I wrote a while back that is available for both 5e and OSR called Mirror Mirror. And it is a mystery. It is a mystery. There's strange things that are going on. And the players have to unravel that mystery. It's not really presented as a mystery. It's just that what they're hired to do is incongruous with what they explore and discover, right? They come into, it's a very fantasy. I'll just give a quick overview. Very, very, fairy tale kind of setting. And the players are hired by the king to go stop the evil necromancer who we presume has kidnapped our hero, the paladin, who is meant to wed his daughter, the princess. That's the gist. And as the players explore, oh, by the way, super spoiler alert, I guess. I'm going to spoil this whole module for you, so sorry.
hopefully we're mostly right. DMs. Mostly DMs here, I hope.
Yeah, great. Okay. Yeah. You know, the reality of what's happened in this scenario is that the princess is in love with the necromancer, who's actually a pretty nice guy. The paladin is a complete jerk. He has run afoul of other things, totally unrelated. Just because he's kind of a jerk, and that happens, he finally got his comeuppance, right? And the expectations of the king are just out of, you know, totally out of proportion. Princess is actively planning to go run away with the necromancer any day now. And I bring this all up because of the delightful thing you mentioned about how magic ruins these. And I'd say in this case, the magic does not ruin it. right? In this scenario, magic does not ruin it, because I absolutely had a play group who came in, and the very first thing they do is they're walking in and listening to the king orate about how the, you know, how the evil necromancer is a terrible person and has abducted, you know, his soon to be heir. One of the players casts Read Minds. Right, and just starts picking otherwise up known as a ESP, lot of weird
stuff. We tend to call ESP Read Minds for other demon players.
So just immediately, and they then they just glom onto it. They immediately discover, like, oh, there's some weird emotions coming from the princess. Let's go have a private conversation with her. And they quickly pick up that, like, she is not telling the truth, and that there's something nefarious going on, and she's not to be trusted. Did that change the overall scenario? I mean, it changed their motivations in moving through the content, but they still wanted to do it. They still wanted to figure out what's going on. Now they want to do it because they want to stop the princess, right? And they know that, like, probably just telling on her to the king, not going to go well. So, like, we got to go get some evidence, right? We got to go collect clues and determine the truth, right? So they still wanted to engage in the content, but just from a completely different angle because of the magic. And I actually, that run of it was super delightful for me. I loved it.
Nice. I think I could. What level is that written for?
Ooh, good question. I think it's like 5 to 7, if I remember correctly. I'm gonna have to look that up. Double check myself. So that's usually my personal. Yeah. My personal favorite level that to run feels, at.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me a bit.
Yeah. It's the party isn't like super uber powerful, but they've got some stuff. They've got some tricks. Yeah.
Probably 5 to 7. Can I go on? Can I present my thesis about the magic in D&D vis-a-vis murder mysteries? Okay. Yeah. So you know, D&D, you know, is very kitchen sinky. If they threw it's relatively high magic, right? Classic D&D is frankly relatively high magic compared to like classic literature or stuff like that. You know, and Gygax has an article about, oh, the light spells that Gandalf thrills everybody with are the lowest level things that we have in D&D. So you right off the, if you're going to run like a murder mystery, right off the bat, the very first problem is that at first level wizard spells, they have charm person, right? And in the original presentation, we've debated this for decades at this point, but in the original presentation, you hit somebody with charm person, they're entirely, totally under your control, enslaved in every way. Mm-hmm. I tend to still kind of play it like that, of you ask and they'll just blab literally anything. So, you know, people keeping secrets is kind of a problem. Now, if you ignore the charm person issue, the spells at like most of the spells at like first to fourth level, you know, like maybe ESP, like maybe Read Minds, you can kind of get away with as like someone having like really good, clever detective skills. So things like read languages and magic, right? Okay, you know, investigators should be able to do that. Maybe ESP, maybe clairaudience, clairvoyance, and being able to see the next room over, you know, locate object. Those kinds of things aren't entirely game breaking. But then when you get to the fifth level spells, basically it's broken, because at fifth level, wizards get contact higher plane and they can just sorcerously get answers to questions that from another plane. The clerics get commune that does the same thing. You get raised dead that you can just, so at that point you have a problem whereby the murder victim could just be brought back. The murder could be reversed, right? There's no murder because we just raised them. And on a campaign level, you know, like I think in the chat a while back, somebody, possibly Joshua, said these things work best when you're isolated, like you're low level, you're isolated in a manner, there aren't many people around. Okay. But in a campaign, and you can point to Assassin's Knot, that there's a town, there's a baron, there's a lord, there's a high priest, right? If there's someone around who's high enough level to cast Raise Dead or reincarnation, and the murder victim was important, like a baron or somebody like that, why aren't they just raised? It doesn't make any sense anymore in the context where you've made raising from the dead relatively easy for the player characters, why there isn't someone important that you would use that on. So once you get to high level and you have commune, you have raised dead, you have crystal balls, they can just see anything you want. And then, you know, and like clerics get that stuff at like seventh level, kind of, you know, at the upper end of the range you're talking about, mm-hmm. Paul, 5 to 7, seventh level clerics get that stuff. And then I think even worse to my standards is in the Greyhawk supplement a year later, right? Then they give Speak with Dead to clerics, I believe is a third level mm-hmm. spell. So now you can just talk to the dead. You can just talk to the murder victim and say, what happened? And they'll just tell you, right? So at relatively even moderate levels, to my feeling, that stuff gets completely broken. And then the next thing that happens is that the D&D murder mystery writer starts backfilling all this. Oh, well, this magic won't work for this reason, and this magic won't work for that reason. Yeah. And it tends to not be very compelling to me. And there's things you could do like just for the, like, why can't you bring somebody back? There's stuff in the books, like maybe the body's gone. Okay. It's gone to the body. Or they were level drained, okay? Or they were turned into an undead. These are feasible things. But when you ad hoc some reason in D&D why you can't do that, that starts to really grind against me. Let me just pick on Assassin's Knot for a second on this mm-hmm. point. So first of all, the Baron's murdered. They find the body. And part of the preface is, oh, we tried to speak with dead and it failed. We tried to raise the Baron and it failed. And I don't believe they ever explain why, unless I missed it. And if there's a reason in L2 for that, and I overlooked it, please share it with us. I don't think that's explained at all. Then there's a high priest, and this is for what it's worth, it's on page 15 of the book. There's a high priest who's high enough level to have commune. So there's a piece of text at the end of his description that says this. It says, a commune should not be allowed to spoil the mystery. Harper, our high priest, well, he may misquote the questions in the spell, or he may fumble the answers, or I'm sure this will be a lot of fun in this process. Also, he never harms anyone else, including members of the Assassin's Guild. So he will not allow his commune spell to be used to the detriment of these. Also, he's a cleric of the sea goddess, and she doesn't care what happens on land. And so, to my mind, okay, end of quote. So that's like a lot of chafe. That's a lot of kind of like, we didn't really think this through, and we're just going to throw a whole lot. He's confused and doesn't harm assassins, and the sea god doesn't care what happens on land. And I'm like, that you didn't really think that through a whole lot. So the murder mysteries, I really don't like it when they tend to do that.
I completely agree with all of that, Dan. Absolutely agree with all of that. And frankly, as I look at the mystery adventures I've written and the ones that I've read that I like, they're almost never a straight murder mystery, right? It's simply like, there is a corpse, you must figure out who killed them.
Yeah.
Like, it's a terrible kind of mystery to, like, just don't, I don't think that belongs in D&D. I agree. Like, most of the things I like are a variant, or, you know, like, look at Power Behind the Throne. The mystery isn't that there's someone has died. The mystery is there's these weird taxes and all these people jockeying these political powers who seem to be backing them for, we don't know why, right? And then there's this, it turns out, actually, okay, spoilers for Power Behind the Throne, right? It turns out that there was a murder. There absolutely was a murder. And the person who was murdered was then replaced with a doppelganger. So, right, so you have, right, so it doesn't seem like there's a murder. We don't think there's a murder. There's a potential for the players to discover a body and go, what? Right? So that's nice. That's a nice moment for them, right? But
immune to ESP. That's in the book. So you could kind of like that could be part of your puzzle.
I don't mind the use of magic in these cases. Like, in that adventure, I would love it if the players like discover the body and go like, well, we're going to talk to it. Great. That is a great source of information for you guys. I want in these mysteries to be giving the players information, right? I want that stuff to come out. Right. The whole fun of secrets is telling the secrets, is revealing the secret, right? It's keeping the secret the whole time. It's no fun.
Generally, I agree with that, but a lot of times I don't see how that doesn't just immediately end the mystery of like, it was Bob. Bob stabbed me. The end.
Well, okay. So this goes back to like the two things that I think are the most important about a good mystery written material is one, it shouldn't matter if the players solve it or not. There should be, you should absolutely prepare for the outcome that the players fail. And that should be a viable and not just it's possible, but like it will still be fun, right? The arc of the content will still be enjoyable even if the players completely flub it. That is important. And two, you should have a good outline of like, here's what's going to happen if the players do flub it or just don't involve themselves at all, right? I think you want that of like, here's going to be the sequence of events. This is what would happen if the players just didn't even show up. I think that's important to have that information. Of course, you know, it may be completely out the window once the players start doing stuff, but you should know what is going to happen, right? So for me, in that case of like, oh, the players discover this corpse and they talk to the dead and they find out who killed them. Then the fun is like, well, now what? What are they going to do with that information, right? Who are they going to tell? Who do they trust at this point, right? Right? Is that person going to believe them? Right? Like, you know, I think that there should be enough going on that like those answers aren't all immediately obvious. It's not just like, oh, you talked to him and he told you, huh? All right, I guess we're done here. Next, right? Like, yeah, it works well in Power Behind the Throne because like there's like 16 people involved and you don't know who's on the level or not. Like you might just, oh wow, the guy we are tracing because he's doing weird stuff, we just found his corpse, but he's still out there. What? Right? Let's talk to the corpse and maybe we'll get a little more information, but like still want to know who's impersonating him? Why? Right? What's happening here? There's still mystery to solve.
I mean, like Steve says in the chat right at the moment, he's, you know, Warhammer Fantasy Roleplaying is a relatively low magic system compared to like D&D. So I believe in, you know, not being a big Warhammer player, they can't just go around and ESP all 16 suspects and find out which side they're on. I assume that's not an option.
It's an interesting point.
You kind of couldn't do that in D&D.
Yeah, yeah. Now, admittedly, I was running my homebrew 10 Dead Rats game, which is 100% based on OD&D. So those spells were certainly available. That said, I don't think any of my players in my playgroup actually started with magic. And so they didn't go that route. And so they just didn't have, in this particular case, when I ran that content for them, they didn't have that available to them. But I think it would be fine. Again, I'm down for that. Yeah, go in there and ESP somebody. Learn some stuff. Why not? I guess I don't see any difference between that and like, no, we went and talked to him and we're just very clever and we're good interrogators and we got the information out of him that way. Eh? I don't mind too. Right? Like, I guess I want that door to be open regardless, right? I want the door to be open for them to be like, no, we went interrogated him and we figured it out.
Yeah.
We're clever and he's dumb, right? Like, great.
Cool. Okay. All right.
Yeah. 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 So I don't know. I would push against the idea that magic spoils it. But I think largely in order for that to be true, the mystery they're solving has to be reasonably complex, right? There's got to be multiple factors going on or reasons for distrust amongst the people you're working for, right? Like if you're in a very cut and dry, like we see in Assassin's Knot, where like the people, you've already done great service to the town. Everyone trusts you. You're sent off to go investigate this thing, right? You have these high level NPCs who generally are on the same side as you. Like, it's just too much, right? We need more mistrust or more angles of what the hell's going on here. Yeah.
Now I will say, okay, so partly in agreement with the, like, feel free to give more information. I mean, ironically at the moment in my Star from Tears campaign, I'm currently running module SF1, Volturnus Planet of Mystery. Just happens to be the adventure I'm currently running. And the players that I have, and there's quite a lot of crossover between 10 Dead Rats and the players of my Star from Tears campaign. We're having a really good time with it. We've been playing for months and months. And I will say that, you know, the writers, one of whom is Tom Moldvay and Mark Akers, again, you know, kind of fall into the habit of trying to tighten the trying to be tight-fisted with the mystery information. And they routinely say the pirates that you capture and fight, well, no one says anything. Under no circumstances, they'll never say anything whatsoever about the plans or the plots or anything like that. And there tends to be somewhat unreasonably slim amount of clues or documents that don't show up until like critical places. And to a large degree, I've just been willing to just like break all that advice. And again, the game just happens to have a truth serum drug that every medic skilled person has on them all the time. So that has just like broken the whole nobody talks about anything wide open. And I've been very happy with that. And it seems like the game has become much freer like that. So we don't have magic. We don't have ESP. They can't commune, but they do have this truth serum to get truth out of people. And that seems to have been a benefit to the game.
You know, I feel like we're running the clock on some of the advice I was hoping we were going to get to in this. So that's fine. That's totally fine. But the funny thing is, I think that it's better to have, it's a better problem to have, that the players have too much information or quickly see through. Like, I've rarely had instances where the players saw straight through the mystery or of whatever is going on and just got it right away. And we're like, great, now what? Like, how do we execute, right? Now it becomes a problem of how do we handle this situation we find ourselves in now that we know the truth, which is in itself fun, right? So I'm down for that. On the other hand, being too stingy and tight-fisted with stuff, you end up with the potential outcome of the players are stymied. And they're just like, I don't know. How do we move forward, right? Like, the mystery is a mystery. I don't understand it, right? And there's some good techniques for handling that, right? Like, you know, we didn't get into it, but we were talking earlier about Justin Alexander's So You Want to Be a Game Master has a whole chapter on mysteries here. Talks about his three clue rule, right? Which is something I super agree with. This idea of like, if there's some key piece of information that the players must have, you need at least three clues that reveal that information, because they're probably going to miss two. Right. And I'm inclined to like, yes, push on that and go overboard with it of like, yeah, give them magic that's just going to reveal the truth to them, or, you know, put a dozen clues in that all, right? That happens in some of my, I think I've talked about this in the past, in my Fearful Ends Mazes and Monsters game. There's this one clue that appears in like five different places. And the nice thing is, not only does it lead them to the next location of where they should investigate, but it also does a nice job of, if they find the clue and disregard it, when they find it a second and a third time, it underscores, oh, this is important. Oh, I'm connecting dots, right? I found the same information in location A as I found in location B. Therefore, this thing must be really important. Our investigation should go down this line. And I think that's
solid.
You move ahead with I guess. That's fine. Give them the information. Don't be stingy.
You know, that's good advice, honestly.
Yeah. Anyway, Dan, we are rapidly running out of time. Was there any other classic mystery stuff you wanted to talk about?
Well, you know, I really like the original series from TSR, the Giants Drow series, you know, has caught my imagination. Maybe that's among one of the best things that's ever been done, of you have these rampaging armies of giants. And then at some later point, it turns out that they're being directed by sorcerous, frail, dark elves from underneath the earth that you didn't know about to begin with. That seems that worked. That caught a lot of people's imaginations. You know, I feel like that wasn't the point, right? You're not directed. Find out who's directing the giants isn't really the point to begin with. And I do feel that for D&D, right, exploring spaces, right, finding secret chambers, you know, investigating ancient ruins, that's all part of the gameplay. And I feel like for D&D, mysteries that are unraveled by exploring spaces, that, you know, we need to break into a hidden chamber and find the thing, is kind of works in a way that, you know, interrogations of people isn't exactly what D&D is about. You know, what a mystery can be, where's the treasure? where is the treasure in that? You know, fundamentally, the core, you know, offer of D&D is where's the treasure in this dungeon, and getting information about that is fun and interesting play, whereas just like talking about it is kind of a different thing.
I feel like this is like if you broaden the spectrum a bit of like what is a mystery, you know, I feel like all of the best D&D adventures include a mystery, right? The implicit mystery of what is this place, right? Why is this here? Why is it like this? And usually in most adventures, you know, your standard dungeon crawl, it's not actually important, right? It's not the thrust, as you say, right? In the G series, right? In the G series, like, we got to deal with these giants. The fact that they're being controlled by another group, that's interesting, but we still got to deal with these giants, right? So, and I like that, right? And I like dungeon crawls where there's this, like, what is this weird place? Why did it get abandoned? What happened here, right? Some players will dig into that and get interested in that, but it doesn't matter, right? It doesn't matter if the main goal is actually just find treasure. Great, you're going to find treasure. There's plenty of treasure in there. But also, isn't it interesting? Isn't it fascinating how this thing got this way? And then maybe by solving the mystery of why is this place like this, maybe that will reveal like, oh, there's another place. We should go there because there's even bigger treasure, something like that.
I think that's a great point to have the mystery be part of the rest of your campaign, because if some of your players aren't into unraveling a murder mystery, they still have stuff to do. They can explore, they can fight, they can get their resources, stuff like that. If it turns out that some or all of your players are really interested in pursuing the mystery of the place, great, the game becomes that, right? But if none of your players are interested in that, you still have other stuff in your adventure, in your campaign for them to pursue. So, you know, having it be part of a larger fabric is nice, as opposed to just like, Alice got murdered. Your job is figure out who did it, and you have no other content. Then you may get boxed in with players not, you know, being stuck possibly.
And I'll say that is where Warhammer's Power Above the Throne succeeds, is that the again, here, bigger spoilers, right? The point about the whole point of that scenario is that there is a nefarious organization that has many cells that operating towards their ends. There was one cell in Middenheim, and it's doing these things to advance the greater goals of the large organization. And really the only important thing is that the players discover that fact. Oh, interesting. That big nefarious organization has its tendrils in Middenheim. Whether they continue to hold onto and squeeze Middenheim or the players subvert that, doesn't matter. Unimportant, right? The important thing is the players go, something bigger is going on here.
It's nice that it's got that freedom. I think that's a good thing myself.
I think that really makes it a good adventure. Though I will still say I was very skeptical reading that thing. I was like, oh, this is going to be where the content breaks for us. And nope, players loved it. Dan, we are just about out of time. Any final thoughts on mysteries?
I mean, for me, and feel free to disagree, anybody, but for me, you know, D&D is good for investigating spaces, right? Secret chambers, old crypts, things like that, golden. If you want to do Columbo-style murder mysteries, for me, I think you got to stick to kind of low level in D&D or other game systems. And you know what? If you want to run a murder mystery, that is actually a great excuse to go try out a different game system that's really, you know, focused on that kind of thing, possibly Fearful Ends or something like that, Paul.
Yeah, I think you can kind of have your cake and eat it too here. I think that like that it's interesting to have a D&D adventure that begins with a mystery that you're tempted to solve, assuming that it leads to locations, that like part of the investigation of figuring it out is going to lead you to like, we should go explore this place. I think that you know, yeah, if you're in the very classic Agatha Christie, we're locked in a mansion and all that there is for us to do is to talk to the inhabitants. Yeah, maybe D&D is not really the game you want to be running for that. And yeah, you could probably have that kind of, you could have a session of that in your larger D&D campaign. And that's fine as a little breather and fun little bit of stuff to go on. But it is definitely outside of what D&D is strongest at.
Yeah. Yeah. Remember charm person. What are you going to do about that? Just tell me what you know.
Yeah. Viewers, if you have some other examples for us of mystery adventures, especially ones that you think are done well, would love to see those. Please leave us some comments here in the YouTube videos. Very curious to hear more about this and dig into it more, and maybe we'll have some more thoughts in another show down the road.
Definitely. And remember that you can like, follow, and subscribe to us. We're the Wandering DMs. We're on YouTube and Twitch and Facebook and GitHub, and we do have the handle Wandering DMs on all those sites. So please go ahead and probe that like button.
If you prefer to listen to our show in audio-only podcast format, you can do so. Those files are available on our website at wanderingdms.com, also through various carriers like Spotify and iTunes. If you're listening to our show on one of those carriers right now, or any site that carries our show, and the option is available to you, please rate and review our show. That helps other users of that site find us, and we really appreciate it.
We really do. And of course, huge thanks to our patrons who support the show. If you'd like to join them, please visit patreon.com/wanderingdms. And just like Paul said at the top of the hour, every one of our tier gets you access to our private Discord server where the conversation continues around the clock. We have just the most tasteful, intelligent viewers and patrons, and just all kinds of great conversations about D&D and horror games and miniatures and war games and all kinds of stuff going on all the time. So we would love to see you in the after chat in about 10 minutes. We as usual, we kind of scratched the surface of the topic. We had a bunch of other stuff that we didn't quite fit in the hour. So hopefully we'll hear some stuff from you in the after chat in a couple minutes.
Join the Discord, and even if you can't make it to the after chat, maybe you can help solve the mystery of did Bakuyas make or not make a critical failure system that is way better than Dan's. Come on, Dan.
Okay. Well, don't forget, everybody, we're live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern time. So please, we hope you'll join us again next week for another thought-provoking discussion.
We'll see you.